Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. It cannot be denied, Charlotte's youngest professional team is also the city's bright spot. Charlotte FC is now halfway through its fourth season, one that started strong. At one point, the club was first place in the Eastern Conference for the first time in franchise history. But as with most sports seasons, there are highs and lows. And among the lows have been notable injuries, which caused Coach Dean Smith to shuffle the deck. And that shuffling continued as some players were called up to the U.S. national team. Still, hopefuls believe Charlotte FC is shaping up to be a serious contender in the Eastern Conference, and if the team stays healthy and the stars align, literally and figuratively, Charlotte FC should be or could be pushing for a top four finish in the East and maybe even a trophy run. Here to recap the season so far and look ahead is Steve Goldberg. He covers Charlotte's four professional soccer teams and teams around the world for the Charlotte Post's Queen City Football Chronicle. Jaime Moreno is the Spanish language play-by-play announcer for Charlotte FC broadcast, which can be heard here locally on La Raza 106.1. And Carol Walton is a writer for the Charlotte Ledger, who writes about soccer as well. Thank you all for being here. Good morning.
Morning.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. Thank you for having us.
You're very welcome. Steve, I'm going to start with you. We're going to talk about the alchemy that Coach Dean Smith may have to use to concoct that secret sauce and keep winning these games in the face of challenges. But in reality, is he the secret sauce?
Well, he's definitely been a positive and relaxing change for the soccer scene here with the players. Dean has tremendous experience. He's taken clubs in England back up to the first division, so he knows how to improve clubs there. Dean is a very relaxed person. You're not going to see any histrionics and stuff, even when he has the frustrations that he's had with, you know, some of the mistakes, a lot of the officiating calls that the team has had in MLS. And I think he's the right Dean Smith for this team, the same way the other Dean Smith was the right guy for Chapel Hill.
He recently signed a contract that will keep him with the team through the 2027 MLS season. Of course, that's never a guarantee for teams, particularly teams owned by David Tepper. But he is the third coach in the team's four-year history. So does that mean anything, Steve? Or does it only mean something as long as they keep winning or they come back from this low ebb?
What it's meant for this club is that they're not shy about making a change when they think it needs to be made. They did so very early with the first coach with the team because it was a breakdown with, you know, player communication. Christian Latanzio came in, did well, but it wasn't good enough and it still wasn't going the direction that they thought. And this is a team that researches their players and their coaches very well. When you look at people they brought in like Pep Biel, who's become, you know, a very significant player for the team. That it says more about the management structure and what they're doing. You know, that they're committed to, you know, improving this team as they move forward.
Carol, I think it was last year when you were on the program and we were talking about Charlotte FC, that we talked about Dean Smith's arrival and how everybody was excited about his arrival and how he dealt with players. And it was a new day for the team when he came in and we started to win. Are fans as excited today about Dean Smith and his influence on the team as they were then?
I think that there's probably been a little bit of a lull in May. It was a rough May, so he's taken a little heat just like everybody else. But I think in general, it's pretty widely accepted that he's the guy for the job and knows what he's doing. It's just been a couple of big things that have come up that have caused challenges for Charlotte during this month of May.
I mean, we're going to talk about how some players react to people's comments. We'll talk about that later. But is this the kind? He's a pro. I mean, Dean Smith's been around for a while. He's played in, he's coached in different leagues in different countries. Does he pay any attention, do you think, to what the fans are thinking or saying at any given moment, or is he just doing what he does?
I think for the most part, he's doing what he does. He stays off social media, and he would like his players to do the same, but I know living in this modern world, they probably won't. I do think, as you said that question, it made me realize he is adjusting. You know, he has a lot of experience, but it's a different deal when you coach in the U.S. and you deal with the heat that we're dealing with right now with you when you're looking at travel from one time zone to another in different climates. You know, when he first got here, he would say, oh, there's no reason you can't win on the road. It's just packing a suitcase and getting on a plane. But I think after, you know, in his second season, he's come to understand that it does make a difference on your body when you're changing time zones and when the humidity goes up by 40%. And he's kind of, and when you go through a month of May where you're playing 7 of 9 games on the road, he has realized that it takes adjustments.
Jaime, have been dealing with soccer your entire life, and you're not from around these parts. So I want to talk about the heat for a second, because Carol brought up the heat, and it's going to be incredibly hot on the East Coast and for much of the country. And Charlotte FC plays, I think, tomorrow. He's from England, Dean Smith, so it doesn't get quite as hot there normally as it does here. But you... I've seen teams play in Central and South America. They deal with heat all the time, don't they?
Yes, absolutely. And I think, I don't think at particular time when we play at night, the games are at 7 o'clock at night. You know, in Central America and South America, some games are at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock. Hey, even though in Mexico City, they play at 12 o'clock. So the heat is really a factor of how the team is going to perform, but I don't think the heat is the main reason why the team is having the issues that they have right now. So I will say that the heat is a part of it. But when you play at 7 o'clock at night, it's a little bit different.
Yeah, and the heat really hasn't set in yet. It's about to.
Yes.
This team shot up like a rocket ship at the beginning of this season. They were number one for a while in the Eastern Conference. They have since dropped to number 9, I think, with 8 wins, 9 losses, and 1 tie. Carol, which is the more surprising statistic?
I think the number of losses, you know, how about it? We've come to appreciate the magic of a tie, get a point, salvage something. But I think, you know, it's obviously not the heat. The heat's just beginning. But I think some of the main things that attributed to their demise here recently was a couple of key injuries on the back line to their outside fullback, Scott Hurt, and playing a lot of road games in a bunch. You know, there wasn't much of a break or a time for Dean to coach. And also Wilfred Zaha, their new player, has taken some time to get adjusted. So those are the three things I look at for being big factors for what happened to get them down to middle of the pack.
So Jaime, you grew up in Mexico City, as I understand it. You've watched soccer your entire life. It's a sport that's relatively new to America. So how would you compare the type of play that you witness at Charlotte FC games from both our team and their competitors from what you've witnessed elsewhere in the world?
Well, I think we can take as an example the game that we watched last night with Inter Miami, how the MLS is interacting to the rest of the leagues of the world. And I think if you asked me this question 10 years ago, I will tell you it's a difference. Right now, I don't think it's a big difference. The team has the league, and in the whole country has brought players and coaches that have helped to develop the game into a place where you can compete to anybody. So I think the development continues. The teams that are working with the youth programs right now, and it's an example of that. We have a game last week when we played Philadelphia, and you see one of the best teams on the MLS working with youth generation. So that's the development that the league is having. And the team that we have under Charlotte FC, that is Crowd Legacy, has been a machine of producing players for Charlotte FC. And we will talk about some of them a little bit ahead.
What about the fans? Because I know there are NFL teams where the fans are just another player in the game. So what about the fans? How do they differ at Charlotte FC games or games around the United States from those in other parts of the country where soccer is just part of the culture?
Hey, I'm going to share with you a story that a lot of people don't know about it. On one time when they tried to bring the national team from Mexico play into the United States, I was a part of the committee where they needed a city that they needed to go. And somebody on the meeting room say, "What about Charlotte?" And I tell you, the guy that was in charge of the meeting, he say, "Charlotte, where is Charlotte?" I say, "Charlotte, North Carolina." "Okay, do you think we can sell more than 25,000 tickets?" 25,000 tickets is about the break-even to pay the national team of Mexico plus the expenses of the stadium. And they say, "Well, I'm pretty sure we can sell 25,000 tickets." Well, big surprise when they announced the game. 2 weeks later, we already sold 25,000 tickets. So I believe we end up having 48,000 to 50,000 the first time Mexico came to town. So that's the development of the fan to how much they like soccer in North Carolina and South Carolina and the country.
Here we are in the middle of Charlotte FC's fourth season, and we're talking soccer on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Steve, go ahead.
I was going to say that first game actually saw over 70,000 fans the first time Mexico came in. It was against Iceland, and there might have been seven people from Iceland there. And it wasn't even Mexico's strongest team. It was a B team. It was a build-up towards the World Cup, and most of their top players were tied up with club games. And that was Charlotte's first international game. And people came from, you know, hundreds of miles around because it was the first time that Mexico had played in the South. So that's what essentially launched these big international matches coming to Charlotte. And we've had so many since then.
The life of a pro athlete, Steve, it's although it's lucrative for many of them, it's also short. And it seems to be a difficult life because your future is not in your control. Players get traded. Sometimes they're traded to teams that don't win or teams that they really don't have an affinity for in cities that they'd rather not live. But that's the job. With soccer, these players come from all over the world, and sometimes they're only here for a while. They're on loan, essentially, to one team from another. How does that impact the players' psyche, their play, their enthusiasm? Or are they just doing it because this is my job? I don't care where they send me. I'm playing the best I can.
Well, every level you go up in the sport, from like high school to college to professional, it becomes more of a job and a little less fun because of the responsibilities that go and the pressures that go with that. But the players, you know, I have never talked to a player who did it just for the money. They do it. They do love the game, but they also recognize the responsibility. And many of them are, you know, have families and stuff. So that responsibility magnifies. It's a lot different when you're, you know, 20 something right out of college. There's a love of the game that that permeates this. And this is something that actually in this sport definitely transcends to the fans as well, because you have so many there who have also played the game and feel have an understanding about that.
Steve Goldberg covers soccer for the Charlotte Post's QC Football Chronicle. Carol Walton writes about it for the Charlotte Ledger. And Jaime Moreno is the Spanish language play-by-play announcer for their broadcasts. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking Charlotte FC and soccer midway through their 2025 season, their fourth season in town with the Jaime Moreno, the Spanish language play-by-play announcer for the Charlotte FC broadcast. Carol Walton is a writer for the Charlotte Ledger who writes about soccer. And Steve Goldberg also writes about it for the Charlotte Post's QC Football Chronicle. Steve, Charlotte FC, as we have said at the very beginning of this program, was flying high at the start of the season. But as you pointed out in one of the articles you've written for the Charlotte Post, adversity struck. It struck back in May as the team went from the top of the heap to having five straight losses, dropping them to eighth place then. Now they're in ninth place, and I think you called the team at the time hurting, sloppy, and tired. But they play 34 games in a regular season, so put these ups and downs into context. Is what has come to the point, well, just put them into context. How important is it, the fact that they have a lull going on right now?
Well, if you're winning, a lull can get in the way and interrupt with that. When you're losing, sometimes it's what you need. And what's odd, as Carol mentioned, they played nine games in May, seven of those on the road. They only played three games in June, and they've only played one so far, and we're, you know, already on June 24th. So they've had a two-week break, then they had a game, now they've had another, you know, week and a half without games, and then they'll have two in the next 4 days. It's a matter of what they're doing in training, but training is not the games. So getting back in there, having, you know, matches, you know, that mean something is very important. And, you know, it's just a matter of getting back. It's been an odd year, as, you know, Carol and Amy can attest. This is a team that they've made defensive mistakes that you did not see last year. And what the reason for that is not clear, but it's just something that's been new with this team. Chris, go ahead.
I was going to say that NFL teams play every week once the season starts, with maybe a bye week somewhere in that season. Basketball never ends. Baseball never seems to end. And yet we have these big periods of fallowness, if that's a word, in soccer. Does that impact thing, or does it give them a chance to really work on the things that aren't working and improve the things that are?
Well, it's, as Carol mentioned, you know, Gene didn't have a lot of time to coach the team and kind of really implement a lot of what he wants to do or correct things during that nine-game run. He's had plenty of time to do that now. How that works will remain to be seen, because, you know, they've started a second season now with the breaks that they've had. And we'll look to see how they can improve.
And Carol, in a column that you wrote back in May, you chalked up the decline. I think we talked a little bit about this already, but you chalked up the decline in performance to injuries, to defense, to a brutal road schedule. It can't get any easier as the season goes on, it would seem to me. How optimistic are you that they will find themselves back at the top by the end of the season?
Well, I do think it will get easier in the sense that a lot of these road games they had in May will be home games for the second half of the season, and they do play well at home. And listening to what you were saying before sparked mine. I mean, I'm learning soccer like a lot of fans in Charlotte, and the schedule is really crazy. And I think that's a symptom of where soccer fits in the scope of sports in the United States, because a lot of these concessions made on the schedule are to squeeze in international play. They're to get the Club World Cup games in. They're to get Beyonce concerts at Bank of America Stadium, you know. So I feel like, where does Charlotte FC fit in the priority? You know, it's not number one. It's definitely not number one. So this year, I think the team has had to pay the price for some of that. Not economically, I'm sure the team is doing quite well and the league is doing well because of the Club World Cup. But, you know, Dean has expressed some frustrations with having international breaks in the middle of their season, where when you're in Europe, you know, it's more of a natural fit. They cater their season to the winter. You know, and MLS is even talking about flip-flopping, you know, and going to a European schedule, which would have games fall, winter, you know, and wrapping up in the spring, as opposed to starting in the winter, playing through the summer, and wrapping up in the fall. So that's a pretty shift they're thinking about.
And some of these teams use NFL stadiums, so how would that impact that?
Yeah, it would be more difficult, because right now in the fall, there's probably two or three games or two or three weekends where Charlotte FC and the Panthers play the same weekend. and it would be more. It would be more.
So we're in this lull, Jaime. Describe the morale of the team today.
Well, I can tell you what the morale is at the booth. What was the morale when we were at the top? It's very excited, and it looks like every time we play a game, you say, there we go again. And we've been so close to a lot of the games that we play away, but it's this last 30 seconds, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, that we lose concentration of the game, that we think we had the result and something happened. So after you lose a game like that and you have a window of a week that you don't have a game to recover and go back to the field and play again and try to win, the morale is low. So hopefully with the opportunity we have tomorrow to go and play in Kansas City, if we can get the win, I'm pretty sure the morale is going to change. And everything has to be with the result of the game, how the morale is going to be. And I think the main part of being a Smith is to control that on inside the team. And us, are the people that work around the team, we have to build that morale too through the fan base whenever we are on a show or whenever we exposed to talk in different places, to make sure that we keep that morale going, because it's just a matter of time that this team is going to turn the corner.
Steve, did you want to chime in on that?
Yeah, because, as we've seen with all Charlotte sports, winning changes everything. But what Dean has always talked about this season and even last is like how they've performed. And this team has been playing well for the most part, except, say for some of the defensive mistakes this year. But it's all about building. This is a much longer term process. And as Carol was attesting to, the time it's taken Wilfried Zaha to blend with the team. But now he's making these passes that other players are reacting to and reading for through balls, much like Pep Biel was doing at the beginning of the season. And the chemistry continues to build. But there's, it's frustrating for the players, the ones that I've talked to, because they know they're better than what their results are at this time.
Two Saturdays ago, on June 14th, Charlotte FC lost 2-1 against Philadelphia. And here's how Coach Dean Smith reacted.
I thought it was two teams who cancelled each other out a lot of the game, struggled to build up. The last 5-10 minutes of the first half, we were probably on the back foot a little bit because of the energy and the aggression that they play at. I think they probably just play on the mark of whether it's over the top aggression or not.
So, Carol, for the novice, translate that, and not just because of the accent.
I was kind of interested because this time a year ago when Charlotte FC went and played in Philadelphia, he just ripped the game. He just thought it was horrible. So I feel like it was a good sign for both teams that he was giving them credit for canceling each other out. I think, in some regard, after you lose, your team is on a losing streak, it's the coach's job to keep morale up. And he does that in his post-game comments. Although he is an honest guy, he'll tell you what he really thinks. But I think in that game, it was a case of when he says the build up, that means you're having a hard time progressing the ball up the field and getting into goal scoring opportunities.
Yeah. Last season, Christian Kalina, the so-called Croatian wall, was named MLS goalkeeper of the year. But this season he's been struggling. And in the last two games, Dean Smith has put up backup goalie David Bingham. He was in for the game against Philadelphia, and we still lost. And Smith refers to him as Bings.
Bings did well in the last game. I thought he was steady. I just felt it was the right decision to make. Explained it to Cali, Cali's had a break now, so they're both competing for the next game now against Kansas.
So Kalina, when it comes to him, is this just a case, Steve, of someone at the top of the game needing a mental break?
Well, that's why Dean has given him a bit of a break at this time. I mean, Cali has been consistent from day one as Charlotte's number one keeper. And essentially, I believe he's, even though Dean has been very, diplomatic about this, it's kind of, a starter's job to lose and such. And Cali, I think, will probably be in the net for this next game to get him back on track. But there have been little things there. There was a game against Columbus where, you know, he took a shot right to the head, and there have been questions, you know, Carroll has asked about this in press conferences and such, as whether that's made a difference. According to the medical side, he's been good, and that hasn't been an issue. And I don't think it was as well, but there are certain times, you know, it's like a golfer, you know, getting the hips or something every now and then. And when he's facing a lot of shots, not all the goals are Kalina's fault.
So the player who got a lot of negative impact during, I guess, the early part of the season, Jaime, was Wilfred Zaha. He's the star winger. He was doing really well until he wasn't. And then he began complaining about the officiating and had some interactions with other teams. He also replied to fan comments on social media, always a dangerous thing. He wrote this to one post: "We lost a game and somehow it's Zaha's fault. I dribble, I'm selfish. I keep it simple, I'm not doing what I'm being paid to do. I shoot, I should have passed. I pass, I should finish my chances." In other words, every move is criticized, and in the past, every player probably had that kind of reaction to fan reaction, but they didn't have a chance to express it back. In the world of social media, they do. What do comments posted on social media do to or do for a player?
Well, when you're talking about Wilfred Zaha, when you bring a designated player to any MLS team, anyone, the expectations are higher, and they expect you to perform for minute number one that you step into the field. And I think Dennis Smith has been very clear about it. It takes an adjustment time for Wilfred Zaha to start performing the way he's performing right now. You know, Steve was talking about the opportunity that he's taking, that he's doing the things that Pep Biel were doing at one time during the first part of the season. I think he got engaged with social media and start arguing it and talking back to fans. Even though we saw him on the field a couple times getting hot, that's just his personality. You cannot take that away from him. That's what makes Wilfred Zaha Wilfred Zaha. But the only person, I don't know if you had an opportunity, when he started acting weird on the games, the only player that can come close to him and coming down is Ashley Westwood. Ashley Westwood would come and kind of coming down. But that's Wilfred Zaha's personality. It's what it makes him who he is right now. You weren't going to take that away from him. I think he just needs to manage better and understand the fan base is a little bit different in the United States than he is from where he's coming from.
Carol, I could be wrong, but it's my impression that, you know, we don't hear much from NFL players, maybe the quarterback, and usually at a post-game press conference. Maybe the star pitcher for baseball you hear from occasionally, but that's also probably in a post-game press conference. When it comes to soccer, we seem to hear from more individual players. Would that be accurate, or is that my imagination?
Maybe a little bit of both. Okay. I mean, I think one thing that I've found really unique and cool about soccer is the interaction that players have directly with fans. I feel like it's a little bit safer space, or there's a less of an expectation that there's a big line in the sand where you don't interact with each other. So there's a little bit more give and take on social media, where other sports, I feel like American players especially, are conditioned, don't do it, don't cross that line, don't interact. In soccer, for better or for worse, there's a little bit more direct conversation.
Hmm. Is that a U.S. thing, Jaime, or does this happen, this back and forth between fans and players happen all over the world?
I think it's everywhere. But like I say, when you are a designated player and you come to a team that had a very good season last season, they expect you to perform right away. But wherever you go, you see these kind of situations when they bring a player that just with the name makes the team better and make everybody around him better. Just to step into the field and have Zaha on the left side of the field, that make you feel better as a team. So, but it's everywhere. It's everywhere.
We're talking soccer on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. These players, Jaime, come from all over the world, and the style of play is different. The weather is different. I think the pitch is different in some cases for some of these players, and they have to. I keep reading that they have to become acclimated to MLS play. So, what are the differences? What are the things that take getting used to for these players?
I think the environment is the first thing that they need to understand. And the development of the league right now, where he is right now, where the league was 10 years ago. And it's one of the things that the players, I don't know if you agree with me, but 10 years ago, we'll see the league as a retirement league for some of the best players in the world. I think right now it's completely different. It's players that are looking to move to United States to play for MLS, and they on the 26, 27, 28 years old, when they still have a lot of years of development. So, but the main thing that I have to accept that people has to understand when they come and play on the MLS is the environment. Mm. The environment, and the most important thing, the speed of the game in United States, it's a little bit faster, in my opinion, that in the other country.
Oh. You published a comment, Carol, from Tim Ream, who said that this is a, quote, physical league. It takes time to get comfortable and do the things you want to do. And referring to Zaha, he added, it's understanding what he can and can't do, what will be called and what won't be called, and what type of impact he can have. Explain that.
I think reading between the lines a little bit, no matter who you are, when you come into this league, the officials need a little time. You know, they're not going to make calls based on your background. They're just not. It's just a human thing. So they want you to earn their respect. And they would probably never say that, but that's been my impression of watching this team for the last 3 years. So I think number one is you got to give the officiating a chance. You got to earn some respect before you expect to get every call.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about MLS soccer, particularly about Charlotte FC mid-season. They're in a little bit of a lull after having been in first place at the top of the season, and there are people who are optimistic about returning to that position before the end of the season. We're talking about it with Carol Walton, writer for the Charlotte Ledger, Steve Goldberg, who covers soccer for the Charlotte Post's QC Football Chronicle, and Jaime Moreno is the Spanish language play-by-play announcer for the Charlotte FC Spanish language broadcast on their network, which can be heard locally on La Raza 106.1. Players come and go, and they get called up to play for other teams occasionally, and Jaime, Patrick Adjiman has stepped into the striker role after the departure of Carol. I'm going to say his name wrong, but Zwiderski, and also the departure of Enzo Capetti. Adjiman has gotten called up to the U.S. national team throughout the season, too. Technically, a striker's job, as I understand it, is to score goals. But isn't that the job of every player on a soccer team? And if not, how has Adjiman performed?
Well, to talk about Patrick Adjiman, you have to understand where is he coming from and what he had accomplished from day number one that he came into the organization. When they drafted, a lot of people questioned Sona Cruneta, the sporting director, about who is this guy? And I think the answer came a year later when he started working for playing for Crown Legacy. And he was unstoppable. And he's the kind of player that you say everybody's job is to make sure that we put the ball on the net, okay? But he's a finisher. He's the one that is going to put the final touch to put it on the net. But one of the things that I think can describe Patrick Kajeman at this particular time, that anytime, anywhere, you can put a ball in the top and he will have a one-on-one and he's going to win 80% of the time. He's physical, he's smart, he's big, and the most important thing, he's a team player. He's not selfish, and you can see what he's doing to the national team right now with Mauricio Pochettino. And funny story is because we played in Orlando, the playoffs, Steve, Carl, I don't know if you remember, Mauricio Pochettino was there. And when they saw playing Patrick Kajeman, he said, who is this guy?
Yeah.
Who is this guy? He said, well, this guy is the one that put Carl to the rescue out of their job, El Tanque Copetti, out of the job, do two designated players he took over, and now he's the starter for the team. And Mauricio Pochettino fit him on his system the way he wants Patrick Kajeman to be.
Steve, players get traded. They get put out on loan to other teams. We bring people in on loan from other teams. Some players get kicked up to the national team for a while. And all of that, I suppose, is good for the player. But if you're trying to build momentum, if you're trying to build a team, how frustrating is that?
Well, that's definitely one of Dean's major frustrations here with the lack of international breaks when the U.S. national team is playing. This is just the way it is, given the scheduling of MLS, though they could do things. Charlotte had a slight break during this period, and they were missing against Philadelphia. Both Aguimon and Ream were away, but Philadelphia was also missing players away with the national team. It's a blessing and a curse. When you don't have your best players there, your team is going to be different. It may be less. It may give another player an opportunity to show what they can do. But it also, the blessing side of it is, there's greater competition. Iron sharpens iron. Aguimon is one of the only players who's played all of the games for the U.S., recently, since he's had chances to do so. He's scored two goals in the Gold Cup, and he's very close to, building a chance to be on the World Cup team next year. That'll depend to see what happens with, some other U.S. players who are out on injury right now. But he has a chance to prove himself on the national team level.
MLS allows teams to acquire up to three players whose total compensation – I'm not going to get into this because this gets into the weeds of money, but it allows three players whose total compensation and acquisition costs exceed the maximum salary budget charge, and the club takes over financial responsibility for the difference. Those are people called designated players. There's also a young DP category for players under 23, which comes with a lower salary cap hit. Lille, I think that's how you say his name, Lille Abata, is that right, Carol?
Yes.
Okay. Lille Abata is one of those young DPs who joined the club in March of 24. He's from Israel. He's dynamic. He is fast. He gets goals, but he hasn't been starting as much this year. Carol, what are your thoughts on why?
I think maybe with another year, the league is kind of adjusted to what his strengths are, for one. Two, he's still developing. He's still young. His speed is his greatest asset. Sometimes I think he gets lost in the buildup and will turn the ball over. So Dean has pushed him this year, and he doesn't take for granted he's starting. Kerwin Vargas has come on late, and the two of them together, I think, have pushed each other.
And it isn't just players who've gotten themselves in a little hot water because they are expressive. Dean Smith, the coach, has gotten himself into that situation for being vocal about calls. In April, he and Captain Ashley Westwood were issued undisclosed fines for comments made following Charlotte's match against the New England Revolution. Those comments were allegedly in violation of the league's public criticism policy. Jaime, do we know what he said or what either of them said?
Well, Carol mentioned that before about Steve Smith. He's gonna talk his heart. He's gonna tell you how he feels. And if you go back to that particular game where I call it, it was a trap game, because you look at New England Revolution record and you say, okay, it won't be that hard. And all of a sudden, referees start making decisions that are affecting the result of the game or the outcome of the game. And I think Dean Smith learned his lesson when he talked. He was fined by the league by criticizing the referee of the game. But yeah. I think what he said, I think he was right.
Carol?
I think he used the word incompetent. Incompetent about four or five times in the post game. And while it sounds nice because he says it with a British accent, I think the repetition of it got the message across.
Hey, Steve, is this really any – coaches in all sports complain about the officiating from time to time, and they get it in the ref's face from time to time, and they say things from time to time. They get fined from time to time. Is this any different?
No, not at all. But, you know, with what's going on now, it's not just the referee on the field that you're dealing with, but you also have the video assistant referee system, which is supposed to be able to correct – a lot of the issues that are there. But again, it's still human. So you're going to have that variance in there. And there have been, as Jaime alluded to, and Carol would agree, there have been a number of decisions made this season that defy, you know, what you think the general common sense would be. It depends. My basic feeling about calls is like, if it was made for my team or against my team, would I feel still the same way, if, you know, in regards to a penalty kick or, you know, things like that. And then the offsides rule is something that was supposed to be more finite, but it seems to have gotten more gray, to where goals have been denied, things like that. And where the physicality that you were talking about before, Patrick Aguemong gets, because of his size, he doesn't get a lot of calls when he is the one being fouled, just because of his size. It can frustrate, you know, the calmest of people out there. And it is, it's never not going to be a thing as long as we have humans, you know, calling these games.
Let's talk about tomorrow's game. The team's next match is in Kansas City tomorrow. What, Carol, can fans expect from that game?
Well, I think it's a chance for Kalina, hopefully, to get back in net and prove himself that he's back on track. Patrick Aguemong and Tim Ream are still gone, so I think you'll see Toke Lamotte, who is a good, talented young player, but still looking to make a big splash while he has an opportunity at striker. I think you'll see they have Suleiman Doumbia back on the outside back, and they looking for a chance to solidify their defense. The last game, they gave up a couple stoppage time goals, so there's opportunities to be had.
Steve, you want to chime in on that too?
Yeah, I mean, this is absolutely a winnable game because Kansas City has only won four games this season, but there are no easy games in MLS. Everyone can put up a fight. But Charlotte has proven to be better against the top teams. They've beaten Columbus. They've beaten Cincinnati. They should have taken a point at Philadelphia. They lost that on the last kick of the game in the eighth minute of added time. They can definitely win. They won in Canada for the first time this season over Montreal and Toronto. So we're de facto champions of Canada at this point until proven otherwise. But, you know, this is a game where they have the chance to really jumpstart this second half of the season.
And we're coming off a lull here. This is another away game coming off a loss, and Charlotte has struggled on the road. Would it be helpful, would it have been helpful for the team, Steve, for this game to have been at home so that the crowd could feed them and help get them back on track, or is that immaterial?
No, it's definitely material. The fan base in Charlotte has been fantastic since, you know, 2022. The supporter section is always strong. Charlotte is the second leading team in the league in attendance. This year, the averages have been around 32,000. Last year, it was just under 35, which, you know, it's not the full stadium, but these are crowds that would be among the largest globally, where most stadiums are. Playing at home is definitely a strength for Charlotte FC.
And how has Kansas City been so far this year, Jaime?
Well, they've been struggling. If I tell you in the last two games, they had led 7 goals in. So they come in from a loss 4-2 versus Dallas, if I'm not mistaken. And before that, they lost to LAFC 3-1. Now, this team was one of the best, the first teams that fired the head coach that it's been forever, Per Bernes. That was a coach that took to the team to be one of the best in the league. And they struggled. They didn't, I believe the seventh first game of the season, they didn't add a point. So it's definitely a team that is under construction. They have a Inter coach right now. And they brought two designated players through the season that I think the more they play together, the better they can understand. I'm talking about Manu Garcia and Jovelich that come from LAFC. El Galaxy, actual champion of the MLS. So it's not going to be an easy team. It's what I call those trap games where you think that we can beat this team because the record, but Kansas City playing at home is not an easy team to beat.
You have also called the Panthers games for their Spanish language broadcast. Which is growing faster, the Latino taste for American football or America's taste for soccer?
Jaime. Can you repeat that question?
Sure. Which is, because you called the Panthers games or have called the Panthers game in Spanish, I'm curious, which is growing faster, the Latino taste for American football or Americans' taste for soccer?
I think both ways. If you see the big market for the NFL right now, it's the Latino community. Taking games to Brazil, taking games to Mexico, because the fan base is keep growing, and the MLS is the same thing for Americans. The passion of soccer, I think, is growing as we get more national players recognized worldwide and national wise. I think both are going into the same direction.
We're talking soccer on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Jaime, you're known for your electrifying commentary during the game and your passion and your flair for the play-by-play announcing. Here's what you sounded like at one of last year's matches.
Ahí está Josby Acamil tocando por el centro. Aparece Carol. Carol tiene la oportunidad. Le tocó un poquito largo al Príncipe. ¡Aparece!
I don't think you need to understand Spanish to understand what just happened. Is your approach to bringing these games to life in the ears of listeners that different from your English-speaking counterparts?
No. One of the things that I ask the team that works with me, that we are part of it, is we have to bring excitement every single game, no matter what is. Is the score on the game. The excitement has to be there. Situations like that, when you score a goal, you got to make sure that the people that is listening to us feeling the same way you feeling at that particular time when you're watching the game.
So I have 30 seconds left. Charlotte FC has a record of 8 wins, 9 losses, 1 draw. They're 9th in the Eastern Conference out of 15 teams, and yet some see the playoffs in the team's future, perhaps even the trophy at the end. Very quickly, from each of you, yes or no, is that wishful thinking, Carol?
I think top four is wishful thinking, but a good run is not.
Steve?
This is definitely a team that can get further up in the playoffs.
Jaime?
I think we're going to turn the things around.
Okay. Jaime Moreno is the Spanish language play-by-play announcer for the Charlotte FC broadcast. Carol Walton is a writer who writes about soccer for the Charlotte Ledger. And Steve Goldberg covers soccer here and around the world for the Charlotte Post's QC Football Chronicle. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. Our producer is Chris Jones. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.